This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There will be a new representative in Michigan's 61st State House District next year. The current representative, Margaret O'Brien, is running for state Senate. The 61st District includes the city of Portage, and the Democratic nominee is John Fisher, who joins us. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Gordon. My pleasure.
John Fisher, why don't you begin by telling the audience some more about yourself and what you would like to do if you are elected to the State House.
All right, well, let me make clear, the district is the city of Portage and then four townships, Schoolcraft, Perry, Round, Texas, and Oshtemo. And I'm a native of Portage. I have the distinct pleasure. I'm living in the house where I was born and raised. It's a house that my dad and his brother built. They did everything in it except the plastering. So I'm home, and it's really, really nice to have this unique opportunity. And I'm running because I do have a unique opportunity to serve my home, for which I have a great passion. I'm United Methodist minister, which means I've moved around a little bit, but that house on East Shore Drive has always been home, and the house I was responsible for since my mom's lived there all of my life. As a United Methodist minister, I've grown up as taking care of common people, and not just taking care of, but working with and helping common folks and helping various causes. And now I have this unique opportunity to take that experience to Lansing and work for the common good and be a voice for common folk, which I think has been lacking.
So give us some specific examples. When you say serve the common people or serve the common folk in Lansing, what are some things that you would want to work on?
Well, one of the first things is looking at what common good means. And I learned about that when I was in Portage. I was one of the kids that was first involved in the very first Little League that came to Portage. I remember when the parents got together and said, look, we ought to have a Little League here for all the students that are coming along. Now, unfortunately, it was rather sexist. It was just the boys, and it took a while for that to get corrected. But the parents, the community leaders got together, the school and Upjohn donated land. Some of the farmers, my father included, brought their tractors over. We cleaned off property. We built the Little League diamonds. We put up backstops and fences and built dugouts. We even built a concession stand. And it was a group of people, some of which did not have children. We had a number of fellows who coached that didn't even have kids. But the community coming together for the common good.
How does that come from the state, though? What does the state do to encourage that sort of thing?
Well, what we've lost track of in the common good, infrastructure right now is the most obvious one. Roads are the visible. It was easily put off because, you know, it wasn't real a hot button issue, so nobody was paying much attention, but we all drive on the roads. But the roads are just the visible part of the common good. The rest of it are the water, the sewer, the utilities, environment, all these are common good. Same with education. Public schools are a huge part of the common good. And we've got to get back to fully investing and treating our schools with respect. Right now, politicians are making too much of their life on beating up on the public schools. And it's killing the ability of our students to learn because the staff and the schools are under such pressure and attack. And then the other one is the tax structure. The way it's set up now does not favor the common folk. The people with the least resources are having to pay the highest percentage into their taxes, and the people with the most resources are seeing their tax burden decrease. So we need to address that as well.
Well, let's start with roads. If it were up to you, where would the state come up with the money to repair and maintain the roads? And according to Governor Snyder, that's probably going to cost more than $1 billion. Where would you want to see that money come from?
It needs to be a broad approach on receiving the funds. Just raising the gas tax would not be wise, I don't think. Our gas tax is one of the higher in the region as it is. And if you raise particularly the tax on diesel fuel, the big trucks, which are causing most of the damage, would buy their gas someplace else, get their diesel fuel someplace else. So we have to look at a varied structure of getting that income, some type of fees. It should be the users that pay. So we have to find a way to recoup from the heavy truckers additional costs because they're causing the damage that's needing to be repaired. And if we increase the income or the gas tax, we also then need to offer some way of offsetting that for our lower income people who are really struggling to get to and from work as it is.
So do you favor increasing the gas tax at all, or would you rather not do that as part of a program?
That would be my last resort. It may be part of a package, but if we do that, having a specific package to me is not as important as having a guideline as to who benefits and who pays. Yeah, and this again gets back to the common good. People who are using the roads should be paying for the roads. Now, we all use the roads. I know there's a sense, some of these cars are so fuel efficient, we should burden them with a higher fee of some sort. Well, the lighter cars don't damage the roads that much. So that's not necessarily fair.
This is at WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans speaking with John Fisher, who's the Democratic candidate for State House in Michigan's 61st State House District. All right, let's go to schools. It sounds like you would like to put some more funding into education. Where would you get it?
Well, right now, if you're in charge of a public school and I open a charter school down the street, you have to provide transportation and you have to feed the kids. I don't have to do either of those. But you get the same per pupil fee as I do. That doesn't seem equitable. Also, if I am a parent and I come to you with my special needs child and you're in the public school, you have to educate them and bring the additional resources in that are necessary for that. Me with the charter school, I can say, I'm sorry, we're not set up for that. But you don't get any more money in the public school. We have to address those inequalities. And that would be one of the better places to start getting at some of the funds that the public schools need. Not to have just a flat rate per pupil, but look at what is the actual cost of this pupil going to be and adjust it accordingly. Or what are the things that the school is going to provide and adjust that. So I don't think a charter school who's not providing transportation and is not providing meals should get the same per pupil funding. Same with the new internet, the computer schools.
Virtual schools.
Yeah, the virtual schools. They shouldn't get the same per pupil. They don't have buildings.
Do you believe there is a place for charter schools and virtual schools in Michigan?
I am strongly in favor of public schools. And one of the dilemmas that we have with the charter and the virtual, particularly the charter, is it ends up with the public school being the school of last resort, and that is not healthy. Then it is just the students who can't move and the ones with more limited resources. I think charter schools may have had a place. I loved U High when it was here in town. But that was a special school set up as a lab school by the university. I don't think there's a place, or I don't think that it is helpful to have for-profit education. I think the greater good is better served by nonprofit education. So the charter schools that are set up for profit, I don't see those as helpful. And there is a place for some computer use and perhaps virtual education. My son just got his master's degree online. So there is a place where those can be helpful. But we have to be very careful, because one of the most important things in education is the relationship between a teacher and the student. Yeah, and that's another problem we're having now is evaluation. Yeah, and we don't have a way of evaluating how well do, if you're a teacher, how well you relate to students. Yeah, and that's probably the most important thing you have to offer is your relationship.
So you mentioned wanting to reform tax structure at the beginning. Mm-hmm. If John Fisher got a blank slate and could redesign Michigan's tax system, what would it look like?
We would reinstitute the earned income tax credit. Even President Reagan saw that was one of the best things that we'd ever done. We would go back to the homestead tax credit that we've had. We would reduce or eliminate the pension tax. Now, I have a little delicate situation on that, and my wife's a retired teacher, and so the pension tax applies to us. So I'm talking about lowering a tax that I potentially may be paying. And the truth is, right now, I can afford it. So I don't need to eliminate that tax at my level. But I have a number of parishioners for whom that has become a very threatening situation, and some that are looking at retirement that feel they had made their calculations based on their pensions not being taxed, and now they don't have time to make it up. Yeah, it's a real problem. I would reinstitute, make some fairness in it so that we even be willing to look at a progressive tax, so that the people with the most resources are paying their fair share. As it stands now, well, one of the charts we saw pointed out that once you hit $300,000 in income, $330,000 in income, the last set of tax increases increased your tax $7.
Where did you see this chart?
It would be nice if I'd brought my papers in with me. I'm going to have to say I don't have it in front of me. But it did demonstrate that the people making up to $17,000 paid $120 more. People up to $30,000, a couple hundred dollars more. But that's when the inequity comes in, that the people who have the most resources have the most ability to avoid paying taxes, and we need to stop doing that. We all need to pitch in our fair share.
Does Michigan need any further restrictions or in any way revisit the medical marijuana law approved by voters in 2008?
It is going to take a lot of fine-tuning to get that right. We have a federal law that we're in conflict with. It's intriguing to me that my grandfather, who served in the State House from 1917 to 1922, one of the bills that he helped author was about not operating motor vehicles while under the influence of alcohol or stupefying drugs. Of course, God knows what a stupefying drug would be. But as we go through this thing, we'll have to come up with laws about what level of marijuana, what level of what ingredients are prohibited to operate vehicles.
And how to test for it.
Exactly. And there'll be other new test equipment will come on board as we go on, and how do police spot it. So there'll be lots of adjustments, but it's a done deal. The acceptance, prohibition isn't going to work for it any better than it did alcohol.
John Fisher, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
John Fisher is the Democratic nominee for State House in Michigan's 61st district. That includes the city of Portage and surrounding townships. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.